cheerfulness of the letters will often be covering up personal unhappiness. But I don't think she was often unhappy.
Just as a thing one needs to guard oneself against when looking at
it. I think you might very easily give the impression that this was a completely untrue picture, and it wasn't.
Yes, yes.
It was merely that she was more cheerful than she was, not that she was cheerful when she wasn't. A little bit longer, he said, found the refuge from her mother which she was seeking. Again, I think this is perhaps a bit excessive.
It's not quite as dramatic as that.
No, not quite.
Yes.
And then, at a table of long-faced stretches, all of whom were reading books.
Yes.
This is a bit excessive.
Yes. Can you sort of redo that?
I'll try. I'll try. But they weren't long-faced. Long-faced gives the impression they were gloomy.
Yes.
They were thin.
Yes, it's really the sort of long intellectual faces, do you
know? I know, but it sounds as though they were sitting there being...
Yes, I quite understand, yes.
A little bit further down, you'll say, he had a well-paid post as cryptographer. Now, I don't know how well-paid he was. I told you I had no idea of how well-paid he was. He was a senior official. But what he was paid, I have absolutely no notion. I don't think he was particularly well-paid. I mean, I don't know what a moderately senior civil servant gets paid. He spent it all, anyway. Now, Oliver enjoyed talking to friends about drinking only because this led to sociable contacts and not for the drink itself. That, I think, is emphasis by contradiction. Methinks the lady does protest.
Yes, yes.
Don't you?
Yes.
He enjoyed both.
Yes.
He liked his drink, he liked his contacts. You go to a pub for both.
Yes.
Well, I don't think you need to protest on either side.
Yes.
A little further down, you come to Ray had not liked her as a child as much as Christopher. Now, there again, I think that's difficult to say. She was devoted to him, but she loved Christopher really rather passionately.
I see.
I had nothing to complain about at all. Nobody could have had. What I did not realize was how much she loved Christopher.
Yes.
And as she said, not liked him. She certainly liked him.
Yes, yes, I see. Clearly that is wrong.
That is wrong, I think. And then a conscientiousness which Barbara still admires. Don't think it's quite conscientiousness. That's tact rather than conscientiousness.
Yes, yes, yes. Where's that? I've lost that.
About nearly two-thirds down, between half and two-thirds.
Yes, yes.
No, it's not as strong as that.
Yes.
It's merely that when one's a child, any faintest flavour of preference is picked up, isn't it?
Absolutely, that's frightfully important to get that right, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think that if one's, you know, I mean, it's almost inevitable for any parent to prefer one child to another. I mean, I think it just is human nature. You do, you've got more in common with them, or you, for some reason or another, they're the oldest or the youngest, or whatever, it's something attraction.
Yes.
You're bound to.
Yes.
And usually speaking, people, the children themselves, realize this. What I'm giving a credit for, not blame for, is concealing it, not having it.
Yes.
You see what I mean?
Yes, of course, yes.
A little further down, you say, aided by the fact that there were always servants to do the household work. Now, that is a bit excessive, too. Mm-hmm. They started, as I said, by having two servants and a nurse. They finished by having a part-time char. Well, that's not always servants.
No, no.
And I think if you say always servants, you give an impression of prosperity that you really didn't have.
Yes, yes.
Then you come down again, not because of the progressive views, but because she had absorbed the Strachey taste for freedom. She didn't absorb it. She found the Strachey because she had it.
Yes, and if anything, that would accentuate an existing tendency.
She shared it. She didn't absorb it. Then she also took in the children of Rafe Strachey when their mother was incapable, and Anne and Judith. Let's get the extra one.
Yes.
And at the bottom now, last time, provided the thinking, while Rafe provided the policies, carried out the policies which she's devised. Now here again, I think this is giving the impression that Rafe was no thinker. I wouldn't say that. I would say that Pippa was the strategist and Rafe was the tactician. They both have to think, but they think on different levels.
I see, yes. Yes, I misunderstood that, I think, really.
Oh, no, they both thought all right, and they discussed everything they thought. But Pippa was retiring, and Ray was extrovert. And consequently, when it came to putting them into practice, Ray was much more practical. tactical tactics, whereas Pepa, sitting back, withdrawn, operated the strategic balance. I think it's better to put it that way, because the way you put it, it appears really that she didn't think at all.
Yes, but isn't one of your mother's strengths also the fact that she is so good at handling people? So this is partly a practical business of getting people to do a job.
Indeed, but it is...
But you're saying it's more than that.
I'm saying it's more than that, and I'm saying that they discussed and thought of the policy between them. She wasn't devoid of policy at all. It was merely that she took the more short-term angle of it, whereas Pepper took the more long-term angle of it, as their... I don't know what Mary might have said something on that, but more valuable still.
No, she didn't. We didn't actually talk very much about the National Union, but that does clarify a lot. But so you're really saying there's not much difference in terms of quality of intelligence between the two people. It's just that they use their intelligence for different
things. Not a great deal. I mean, I wouldn't like it to get across that the Ray was not intelligent.
No.
She was considerably intelligent, but she was more practical intelligence.
Yes.
And Pepper was more theoretical intelligence. But they're both of their kinds comparable. And I don't want you to put the impression that one was the intelligence and the other was the hand.
No.
Because that really wasn't true. A little bit further down, Virginia Woolf liked her, though, despite the rather bitchy remarks about her in her letters. I don't know whether she liked her or not. It's impossible to say. I don't think one should emphasize it. Leave it unspoken. Because who Virginia liked and who she didn't like, it's a mystery to me, in view of what she said about everybody. A little bit further down, getting all her political skill from her, from Hannah Pearsall Smith. That's a sweeping statement again, isn't it? Aren't you entitled to have any yourself?
Yes, I mean... insofar as she gets it from anywhere, you would say, that she gets it from...
It was around, and she was operating it.
Yes.
That's about as far as you could say.
Yes.
I think you could probably... she also went where political skill was to be found. I mean, she went touring around America with Anna Shaw. She used to go at Newnham. She used to organize political debates. I mean, you find a lot of experience that way. It wasn't the only place she got it from, but it was there in the background. She's any political party accepted the class attitudes of her day, taking the servants for granted. Again, I'd like you to say service, because the servants, particularly to a modern ear, sounds disproportionately wealthy. She wasn't wealthy. And servants, if you say servants, then you've got to say, since even only moderately wealthy people had servants when she started operating, and at the end she didn't have servants, she only had one half a jar. It is a question of balance.
Oh, yes,
I don't want her to get the impression of her being a lot richer than she was.
No, you're quite right. I'm very glad
a little bit further on, she was a very happy person, enjoying food, sleeping well at night, enjoying the outdoors, and only half comprehending the strategies. Now, I think what you mean there is when she says, A, she's not an intellectual, and B, that she doesn't like some of the abstract discussions. I don't think this is quite the same as not comprehending.
No, I can't quite remember why.
I think this is the result of those two factors.
Yes.
Now, an intellectual, to my mind, is somebody who actually enjoys abstract discussion. But it doesn't follow that you're any less intelligent because you don't do that.
Oh, certainly not. No,
but it does sound like that.
Yes.
She didn't enjoy abstract discussion. She didn't enjoy discussions on ethics and metaphysics and things. She just got bored with them.
It's not because she couldn't follow them or anything like that. It's what just that she not
her. But it wasn't her line.
Mind. She's not interested.
It wasn't her line.
Yes. Whereas your father did like that.
That was his line, completely, yes. I mean, he was a friend of Moore's. He wrote to mind. He was a philosopher. And he liked discussing it, and she didn't. But I think not comprehending them again gives a slightly wrong balance.
But would you go further than that and say that she actually disapproved slightly of abstract discussion?
No, this was a realization that if you were an intellectual, you were likely to find this kind of thing more entertaining than she found it. So yes. The natural result of that was, I can't be an intellectual, can I?
Yes.
Now, there, no decline in her health before her death, simply an operation that went wrong for a cyst, I suppose, yes. But the opening one career after another to the doctors, by the teachers, by all of these, and this she found very inspiring. She tried to make me find very inspiring too. It was rather feat, because most of it I didn't find very interesting. That's what I thought, didn't find it. The cause, she was never worried by not having a career of her own. I sure thought she did have a career of her own.
Yes. Talking then about whether she had a full-time paid career and she was only out.
Ah, yes, yes, but a career she had. Full-time job she didn't have.
Yes.
And then now she always read over meals again. That's a bit sweeping.
Yes.
She wrote back to me and said, no doubt I should be censured for writing the wrong. Now, when I put a mark against that one, I'm going to quote that in my books. I'd rather you didn't quote it.
Yes, of course. Where is
that? That's the bit about the virgin when you're married.
Yes.
I'd rather you didn't quote that. Definitely.
Yes, of course. Yes. So I'll make a note not to do that.
Because that bit I'm going to put in my book.
Yes. Your book, if I may say so, will anyway be out long before mine.
Well, you quoted from that with pleasure, but I'd rather you didn't precede it.
Yes, quite.
Now, a little bit further on, she was not witty in the way the strangers were. She had no speed of repartee or sharpness of phrasing such as they had. And her humour was rather unsophisticated by comparison. That doesn't sound to me like her.
Do elaborate, because I think we did talk about humour, didn't we?
We did.
We were trying to distinguish.
I don't think unsophisticated is quite the word. Or, I don't know, it's very difficult. There was like, there are so many different sorts of humour, aren't there?
Yes.
I mean, I think to many people both would seem sophisticated in different ways. To many one would seem artificial and absurd, and hers would seem more natural and easy. That would perhaps be the only distinction. She was less specialised. She was witty enough in her way, but she was less verbalised.
Yes, I see. Yes.
I mean, the Strangers were really acutely verbalised.
Yes, you see, this is the thing that I just haven't gone through at all, understanding what the Strangers were like in company.
How could you?
there was a lot of sort of presumably elegant intellectualising, was there?
There was a great deal of play on words. A great deal of... you take a statement and you play with it. You make it ridiculous by throwing a different sort of a light on it. You throw it up, you make it, you play with it. You were really juggling with words. Juggling with words, juggling with ideas. And after a bit it became hysterically funny because of the way you did it. But it was all pretty aerial, ethereal. It wasn't very earthy. And it was very much the same sort of humour that they all had. But it was hysterically funny. But it wasn't, it was a very individual sort of humour. And it concerned very much with words. Words and quotations and literary ideas absolutely permeated it. And that wasn't her style of humour. But she was very funny.
Yes. And this style of humour is one that Pippa engages in as much as anybody else.
She wouldn't have done it alone with Ray.
No.
But when she found herself in a family group with one of the others, then pyrotechnics would have started up with screeches of laughter and howling around and rolling in corners and doing all this. You see, it would have happened, you see.
Yes, that's
and right. Ray would have sat there grinning and listening to it and not taking part at that point.
Yes.
She suspected the Berenson way of life, disliked, I should have said, rather than suspected. She disliked it. The world at 18 and retained through throughout her life her indignation that men could regard women throughout the bottom. If you didn't start there, she'd always had it, she always did have it. Mm. World at 18 was merely a...
It just accentuated it, that
experience. Well, it just showed it off, really.
Yeah. I mean,
it was just the first expression of it which she could do.
And then, in the sense, the behaviour of that man crystallised for her what she did already disliked. Is that what you're really saying?
Yes, I should say, it personified rather than crystallised. I mean, here it was, the first man she'd ever come across who really actually treated her like that. She knew it happened. She'd been told it very often. She'd read about it. She knew it. But here it was the first time she'd actually come up against it in person. It didn't alter her phrasing. It just brought it out in the book. She worked it out in the book and went on. Over the tiny bit, to welcome the Women's Employment Federation as an alternative to working through someone else, as her own job, really.
Yes.
As entirely her own job.
Yes. Yes. That's very helpful. I tell you, I can incorporate all those things just in a separate
It's just
section.
Just a question of balance, but it all...
You lose all these passes if you can't have the original recording.
I'm only afraid you won't have them even if you do.
Yes.
So I'm glad to get it down as an argument.
Yes, yes. You're quite right. That's really splendid. One thing I didn't come across actually after talking to you was simply this thing of cynicism, I think the word is. There's a obituary of your mother written by Molly Held, which says that, and I'm paraphrasing very crudely because I can't remember the exact words, I haven't got them here, but something like, people could have misunderstood the way your mother spoke as though it was cynical, whereas in fact she was very much not a cynical person. Now, does that ring a bell in any sense at all?
I think what Molly meant was that she was not an idealist. She was extremely pragmatic about people and the way they behave, and she was extremely entertained by using people's weaknesses to throw them over. And this is, after all, the enjoyment of politics to some extent. I mean, you find people's weak spots and you turn it against them, and I think that she enjoyed. And she enjoyed it with a certain ebullience, which is perhaps not, it's not quite good form for some people. And I think maybe that's what Molly was indicating. I don't think it was cynicism.
Rather the way that Beatrice Webb did, would you say?
Oh, she was a very different character from Beatrice. Beatrice Webb was dry. No, she wasn't. No, Beatrice Webb may have been called cynical. And I expect the end product was much the same. But Ray's was much more, as I say, it was more ebullient. It was more taking fun out of something, whereas Beatrice would have taken satisfaction out of something. You know, slight difference.
Yes, yes. But what I'm really saying is that both of them have certain ideals in life which they want to realise, and they will manipulate persons and their knowledge in order to get those ideals, and may talk in a way that appears cynical to an outsider about the processes of getting. But in fact,
I think she'd be cautious who she talked to.
She was careful in that way, wasn't she?
Sure, she was careful. But Molly was her dearest friend, so obviously she would have talked to her.
Yes. And I did think, I mean, without knowing Agnes Hamilton at all, I thought it was rather good obituary, I must say, as a work of art. But you didn't...
I didn't particularly like Molly. But that was for all sorts of reasons. It was partly because of what... Now this I think may be revealing in one sense, and that is that although Molly's aims were not dissimilar from Ray's in many ways, they were different. The balance was different. And to that extent, in some ways, I think Molly's were more cynical. Because I think Ray's were always inspired by, if you like, the idealism of the woman's cause, which she never lost. whereas Molly was a straight politician, and she was a political politician. And I think in a way that Molly found Ray's political pragmatism surprising in somebody who retained an ideal at all. You know what I mean?
I understand. Would you go so far as to say Molly was a careerist, whereas your mother ultimately wasn't?
No, I wouldn't go so far as to say that. I should have thought that there was an element in that. There was an element in that. But I think what I might perhaps say, and I may be very wrong in this, I didn't know Molly all that well, is that that Molly was a politician's politician. That's to say that she was determined to govern, to get things done, whatever they might be. Whereas what Ray was determined to get done was this.
Yes.
And there is a difference there.
Yes. Yes. That's very helpful. Another thing which did occur to me, I wanted to ask you. You've had this marvellous expression, equal women, when we first met. Now, does that come from your mother?
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
I mean, because that suggests a distance from the feminist movement and an ability to stand back and laugh at it, which we ought to comment on, aren't we?
I think so, yes. When I say it comes from my mother, this was a family growth. It may originally even have come from my father, but it was very happily accepted by my mother. And, I mean, she would, when travelling in an underground with us, she would just as likely to point out to us an equal woman travelling at the other end of the railway carriage as we would to her. And they were so noticeable. There they would sit with tweed skirts, rather short, their legs rather far apart, brogue shoes, rather short hair and a very hairy chin. They were quite unmistakable. They were equal women. Darlings, many often.
Was your mother rather self-consciously anxious shouldn't get branded by that sort of image, do you think?
Couldn't care less. Images were not her game. She was concerned with what went on, not with what they looked like. If they looked that way and were funny to her.
I mean, to be practical, if you want to get something done as a movement, you've got to avoid appearing ridiculous, haven't you?
Yes, but she could really not bring herself to believe that a matter of appearance was of any value to anybody. She really couldn't.
But this is a characteristic of the strangers, isn't it? That there's a lot of laughter at themselves going on.
Oh, yes, yes, a great deal.
I wondered whether this was partly an extension.
No, it went on also amongst us. Oh,
yes.
Oh, indeed, yes. They were mocking themselves right and left.
Yes.
No, laughter was all over the shop.
Yes. Well, that's very helpful. But the thing which perhaps I'll switch off, do you feel like saying anything more about the autobiography and the biography and its defects? I mean, as I understood it, the defects were primarily that your grandmother was not good at understanding personalities and over-sentimentalized relationships and things like that.
That's all true. It's also true that she wrote this in the last 5 years of her life when she was very ill, and really almost destroyed by the death of her own daughter before her, when she had been expecting death for some time herself. And I think also she was separated by war at the time. And the event of Ray's death in those circumstances at 53 was very shattering to her. And her writing of Ray's life was in a sense an emotional self-indulgence and it wasn't really a life of Ray. It was something for her to dwell on. And it had all the disadvantages, therefore, of a personal look at something rather than something which was written for some other people.
Yes.
And I think one was judging in that way as well.
Yes. And wasn't a dimension also of guilt?
Yes. Oh, yes, there was indeed.
Because she left Ray.
And not only had she left, I mean, there again, I mean, I'm not one to criticize somebody for doing that because there are various circumstances which make it inevitable that you should do that. I think the guilt was to some extent brought about by the fact that her mother, that's to say Ray's grandmother, believed with every inch of her that children were infinitely more important than husbands. And she could not understand how her daughter could run away with a man and leave her children behind and therefore choose her own love life, her own emotional life, her own work reference to that looking after her children. She couldn't understand that. And she wrote every day for 9 years, she wrote reproaching her. Now, even if the amount of guilt existed as a fact, it was obviously disproportionately emphasized by this. And I think, therefore, that Mary picked up an amount of guilt which she ought not to have had. I mean, I think it was unfair to her to have that. Some guilt, no doubt, was necessary. But I think she felt more guilty than she would otherwise have felt because of her own mother's treatment of her. This goes on generation after generation, undoubtedly.
And another sort of second reason why biography is unsatisfactory or inaccurate is that the correspondence it's based on is itself opaque.
Opaque, as you say, opaque.
The way in which it's opaque is that, first of all, setbacks, or insofar as there were any, weren't necessarily...
Or indeed, delights. I mean, she would not...
She won't reveal herself.
She wouldn't reveal herself to her mother. She never would. She couldn't, because her mother intruded. And always had intruded, and always did intrude, not only to Ray, but to everybody else she came in contact with. She tried to manipulate people, and she tried to get inside their feelings and events and enjoy them through you. She had a terrible habit of doing what I believe it was that Lea did with her maidservant, to use her as a deputy for having children by the husband, so to speak. And she'd do this in a mental way. She'd use other people to acquire situations and emotions which she was herself not in a position to do. And this, of course, people resented very strongly. And what Ray did as a result of this was to withdraw her inner self completely from her mother and communicate diligently and dutifully and affectionately with her, but on a superficial level. And, of course, Mary was not aware that this was so. So that there is a certain dimension lost in the biography, and what was substituted was a sentimental false picture.
Yes, and insofar as manipulation is attempted, with what in view, really, as far as...
Enjoyment by Mary.
Yes, but I mean, she wants to change your mother into something she wasn't, and that is what a sort of well-dressed, socially smooth,
conventional
woman.
A credit to her. Whatever way she happened to be thinking of at the moment.
Yes, yes.
And someone through whom she could enjoy situations which she might, through age, through situation, or through something else, not any longer be able to enjoy herself.
Yes. Do you think there's any element of reaction against her mother's type of woman in Ray's feminist activity? I mean,
no, I don't think that, because I think that the feminist preceding. I think she disproved her mother because her mother was not the feminist type of woman. Oh, she was to some many extents. I mean, Mary was as good a feminist in many ways as any of the others. What she disapproved of, I think, was the insincerity, the emotional greed, and the snobbery. Those things she disapproved of. But I don't think any of those necessarily precluded feminism.
But there's a further way in which it seems to me, in a way, important to discuss the relationship between Ray and her mother, in that Ray is only really the person she is, partly, sucked by reaction against her mother. Or is that putting it too strongly?
I don't know, you see, I don't know. Supposing, for instance, Mary had vanished completely. I mean, that is, in a sense, involves a reaction too, but supposing she had vanished completely out of Ray's sight, and Ray had been brought up as she was by her grandmother, I don't think the difference would have been very marked, because the influence on her was very much more that of the grandmother who brought her up than of the mother who didn't.
Yes, well, this is another reason, of course, isn't it, for going back in time, in a sense. I'm simply trying to understand quite why we spent so long on that.
I think it was partly simply because that was the only evidence you've got.
Yes, that's right. I mean, clearly one of the major influences on your mother was her grandmother.
Oh, terribly strong.
That's the reason for that is that her mother simply wasn't there for a crucial time, a period of time.
It was, in fact, that her grandmother acted as her surrogate mother, and also that she was an incredibly strong personality, so that personality bringing you up, react against. Ray did not. She reacted precisely with, not against. Yes. That is, by my daughter.
Yes, yes.
And perhaps that means that she used up all her reactions on her mother. Could have been.
And as I understood it last time, the father didn't really play any part much, as far as one could tell.
He died when she was 12. He was an exceedingly busy man and was never present at all, and was, in any case, was much disliked by Hannah, who had the real influence and was edged out of things as much as possibly could, because he was a Catholic, and Hannah very, very strongly wanted the children not to be too influenced by his religious upbringing. So really, the poor man hasn't a chance.
Anyway, of course, he's not on the scene after
quite
a long period. Yes, so that really does clarify the status of the document.
I think it was a very unusual biography,
yes,
and written really for the writer and not for anything else.
Yes. So, as far as relationships with her mother are concerned in later life, when she is of great concern to me, it's really one of keeping her mother posted on what she's doing, pleasing her mother by talking about successes.
And about the family.
About the family, yes.
Putting up with her presence for quite a long period every summer, which was quite an undertaking, I can tell you. Not much fun for anybody. except Mary.
She needed waiting on, did she?
She needed a lot of waiting on in circumstances. I mean, she was accustomed to live with a large number of servants, a great deal of luxury. She had to move into a house which was, so far as comfort was concerned, was very primitive. And yet she had to be kept from complaining madly that this was not uncomfortable. And she also had to be entertained the entire time. And the entire family disliked her very strongly, so it was a bit difficult. But she did work it very well indeed. I mean, she had a very strong sense of family duty. She had a personal sense that it was wrong not to allow her mother to do what she liked in that respect, so long as she didn't distort the children. I mean, she preserved her own children from them as much as she could, because she thought she'd have a bad effect on us. But she had a strong sense of duty and responsibility to her mother, and she carried it out. But she didn't like
her. Yes.
None of us did.
Yes, and she did occasionally go to Italy, what, once a year for a fortnight?
Oh, no, not as much as that. I should say once every other year, when she couldn't avoid it.
I see, she really didn't enjoy
going
there.
She hated it. She disliked it very strongly.
Partly, as I remember you saying, something like, well, you say it.
Well, why she didn't like it, you mean?
Yes, why she didn't enjoy going over there.
Put on a basic point of view, you had to change your clothes three times a day in this place. You had to turn up at dinner and make polite conversation in three languages. And this, to her mind, was such a disastrous waste of time, energy, and intelligence that she couldn't prevent herself from feeling scornful every 5 minutes of the day. And this was not pleasant. And then she liked to be alone a good deal of the time. This she was able to do to some extent. But of course, the minute she did it, in would come Mary, pounding in and talking about something which she didn't want to talk about. But primarily, it was that social life was to her a really ridiculous waste of time, and this was the apparent purpose and operation of all the life there, because the work went on outside her view and was not within her scope in any case. So she disliked it.
Another problem is that she doesn't, well, again, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but she it's not quite her world, the world of Berets.
Oh, no, very much not her world. This was a world of international social, what almost now would be called the intellectual end of the jet set. I mean, it consisted of a lot of international duchesses and characters. I mean, you've got kings coming to lunch and that sort of thing. And Bibi liked the social scene. He liked having these exquisitely brought up Roman duchesses hanging on his lips, you see. This was his idea of fun. It wasn't Ray, I can tell you. I enjoyed it as an onlooker. Ray didn't even enjoy it as an onlooker. She was too scornful of it.
This is the extreme of her general distaste for sociability,
yeah,
isn't it?
Well, I mean, she disliked sociability, but most people's sociability was such that she could take it or leave it. But this raised sociability to such a degree that you had either to regard it as something which was fascinating to watch, or you resent it and disliked it very strongly. And most of the Strachey and Bloomsbury characters felt the way she did about it. They disliked and resented it very strongly. And this, I'm a renegade. I enjoyed it.
So there's quite a lot of the old evangelicalism in the Bloomsbury set to that extent. This sort of feeling that life is a serious business and that one must be extravagant and one mustn't waste one's intellectual opportunities or whatever.
I suppose you could call it that. I think it was also a question of...
You sound quite contemptuous.
Well, I'm just trying to find out whether this... I fight against your evangelical background. I think it was intellectual more than anything else. I mean, I think it was a question of betraying your own intellectual abilities, which they had against B.B., and of selling his soul to the devil for money when he was perfectly capable of being a reputable scholar of some kind, or aesthete, or whatever you like to call it. And I think they thought he had, in fact, betrayed his own capacities. That he did it in the form of snobbery and social life made it all worse, because this was another thing they hated.
So it sort of compounded.
Yeah, it compounded.
But Ray, in fact, had a very strong artistic appreciation, though presumably not the same, she didn't like the same sort of things as B.B., did she, or did she?
I mean, no, I don't think she had very much. She used to complain that she'd been dragged screaming through all the picture galleries of Europe before she was nine, and as a result of this, she'd never been able to enjoy a picture since. And I think there's something in that. It was rather heavily impressed upon her in early childhood that this was beautiful. And this is not a good way to make a child think something's beautiful.
Well, what about the other arts, Mrs. Huckner? What about the theatre or music?
No, she wasn't really gifted for any of the arts.
But novels, literature?
Literature, yes. Literature she was much more interested in than any of the others, and so indeed had Hannah been. But, literature she was perfectly capable of appreciating, and indeed of learning from trying. She did a lot of learning how to write. I mean, she didn't just write out of that, but she did a lot of practice writing from styles of different sorts, the way one wants to write decent prose one may have to do. And, I mean, she really took that seriously. But music she enjoyed as a joke. She wasn't really musical at all, and she didn't very much enjoy going to the concerts, or she did go because Oliver was so fond of them that she went with him. But she wouldn't have gone on her own. Picture she really had no interest in. Now, I don't think she really had much aesthetic interest. Intellectual, yes, to some extent, in spite of what she said. Literature, yes, definitely.
Yes, and what sort of literature actually was helping? I mean, it's partly... trash, is it, as you would call it?
Oh, no, trash was not what you'd call literature. I mean, there is a distinction.
No, I mean...
They happen to take the form of printed words on the page, but they're not the same thing.
No, but I mean, you said that you yourself enjoy reading trash.
I know, but I also enjoy reading literature,
yes.
And I don't regard it as the same thing either.
No, I mean, but she enjoyed both in the same way.
Yes, certainly. I mean, yes. She enjoyed literature. She would read, she'd read a lot of biography and history. That was the most of what she did. She was particularly interested in American history because she'd got onto that through her grandmother. And there was a whole bookshelf, I mean, I suppose it would be about 6 foot square, consisting of nothing but American history, on the stairs, as I remember. And memoirs, literature. But when I say literature, I mean biographies, classical novels, plays, all of that she'd be extremely interested in reading. And would read very frequently and again and again. Anything from Tolstoy to Fielding. I mean, she was all the novels she read were not trash by any means.
And perhaps one could talk at this stage about her relation with Bloomsbury, which I entirely captured at all of what you said.
Well, it's a rather peripheral.
Yes, I mean, she's not in regular association with Bloomsbury at all. She's on the fringe, partly because she doesn't live in the area, partly because she's not of that.
stage were the people who belonged to what's called the memoir club. And the people who, really, they're quite a small group, not more than about 8 of them. And there were a great many people who were peripheral to this. And some of the people who were peripheral were what nowadays would be called Bloomsbury types. And some of them were not. So that the fact that she was not Bloomsbury proper is not a proof that she wasn't a Bloomsbury type. But she also wasn't. You see what I mean?
Yes.
I mean, if you take, for instance, my sister, who was a peripheral Bloomsbury type, a bit young for the most of them, but nevertheless was very much more a Bloomsbury type in many ways than Ray was, although not as intelligent. You take her husband, her first husband, who was a complete Bloomsbury type, although, again, not central to it. Well, many of that kind, or many. But Ray, who was contemporary with most of them, and had got to know them independent of Oliver before she got to know Oliver, but nevertheless, although she was on perfectly good terms with them and entertained them to stay with her and stayed with them and dined with them on a number of occasions, didn't find them as congenial as they found each other. That's about all one can say. And that is, after all, what happens in every stage. She wasn't central Bloomsbury, no.
Yeah. She would occasionally, presumably, be involved in some of their literary discussions by accident.
Oh, indeed. Well, I mean, supposing for the sake of argument, she had 3 strangers staying with her, which often happened. Or, say, Virginia and Leonard were staying with her together with a strange, say, Purple. Well, it is quite inevitable that the conversation after dinner would then become intellectual. And she would obviously get involved in this, and she would enjoy it. She wouldn't enjoy it if it got philosophical. But if it was literary, she'd certainly enjoy it. And if it was general, which it often was. I mean, how can you say what a conversation's about when it's like that? Ranges. But she'd enjoy that immensely.
And, in fact, Bloomsbury would, to some extent, come to her insofar as they went to the Mud House.
And she would occasionally go and say, she'd go stay with Virginia, she'd go and stay with Vanessa, she'd go and stay with Litton. I mean, she would go and stay with all of them, not very often, because she'd try to keep out of it if she could, but she did get lured away sometimes.
And the Strachys, as a group, are really, they're not the Bloomsbury group, they're sort of another group that partly
overlaps, aren't they? Yes.
Now, the Strachys are a group that she's really attracted
to. She really liked them, yes, particularly the ladies.
Yes. What is the attraction of the Strachys for her?
Well, it's very difficult to say, and anything I say must be regarded as a mosaic item. I can throw up a number of reasons, but for God's sake, these are only considered 1 of 1,000 items. All I can do is to throw up this one and that one and that one, and they are not sufficient. I would say, for one thing, they were a family of 5 females, all of whom, I mean, the girls, all of whom were extremely intelligent, extremely articulate, and immense fun to be with. Now, this she enjoyed. She enjoyed it on their own account, because they were women, and because they multiplied each other in the most extraordinary sort of mirroring fashion. When you got 2 of them together, they were far more fascinating than 1. When you got 3, they were almost overwhelmingly fascinating. And this I cannot explain, except that it just happens. Like
they sort of sparked off.
They sparked each other off. They multiplied each other. If you've got male or female, if you've got more than 2 strangers at a party, they would congregate in a corner with their backs to the rest of the party and constitute a sub-strangey party. They were very, very family friends. They loved each other very much. And that's nice too. Then I think she liked their humour very much. She found them entertaining, extremely entertaining as they were. And she became really very, very fond of most of them. But 2, the one at the top and the one at the bottom, she knew least. Well, she knew Marjorie very well. She was perhaps less devoted to Marjorie than some of the others. And Eleanor, who was the oldest, was a little bit out of the ken. But Dorothy, Pippa, and Pernell, the middle ones, she was really devoted to.
There's also an element, isn't there, of...
And they to her, I may say.
Yes.
And they to her, very, very much so. Yes. All 3 of them.
Isn't there also an element of freedom?
you think, you do what you say. I mean, you do what you feel is right to do, and that happens to be extremely congenial to what the others want to do, and it is very nice. But they really adored her too. And she got very involved in the family. For instance, when my grandmother was ill, 24, 25, something like that, Ray used to visit her every day. And she had a sense of family duty, but she also was, you know, I mean, she had a real devotion to it too.
But can you recall that what she used to say about first having it? Was it when she first had a measles with a strange
thing? Oh, yes. This was, she used to tell me that when she was at college, when she was at school and at college, her dearest friend was Ellie Rendell, who was in fact my father's niece. She was the daughter of the eldest sister, Eleanor, and who was contemporary with my mother. And Ellie finally introduced her to her uncle's aunt's families. One year when they were staying at Verdley, which was the big house neighborhood to the house in Friday's Hill where Ray was living. And she invited Ray over to lunch, and Ray had no idea what the family were like at that stage at all. And when she arrived at the lunch, she found a very strange collection of rather weird-looking people, who, many of whom were reading at lunch, you see, and they used to read in the most extraordinary fashion. I'm afraid I still do it too. They read, I can only show you what it looks like, because the thumb sticks out in front of the book, and the sheet of the hand, as it were, behind the book, so that they were all terribly short-sighted. You can hold the book up like this, you see, and turn it over without using the second hand. And this was, again, a family habit of doing this. And they all sat there, rather weird, all bespectacled. And Bertie, when he was involved in a similar experience, said that they, all the males and the females looked exactly alike, except perhaps for the rather superficial appearance. One of them happened to be male, one of them happened to be female. But they certainly looked a bit weird. And there they were, doing their thing, reading their books, taking their hostship very easily indeed. If Ray had shown any great desire to talk to one of them would put the book down and talk to them. But since she didn't, they went on reading, you see. And she said to herself as she sat there at this table, this is the family I'm going to marry into. She didn't then know my father. She didn't even know whether there were any of them unmarried or marriageable. She married one.
And this is a thing that she used to tell you later on.
She found the only